Thanks for listening to the Best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
All right, so I've talked about this ad nauseum. I've talked about it on The Herd. I've talked about it on Undisputed. I've talked about it on First Things First. I've talked about it, of course, on The Odd Couple with Rob Parker, with Ryan Hollins. And now you want to talk about it. And I'm going to give you your – I'm going to let you shoot your shot, as they say.
Shoot MVP your shot when voting. You see him.
MVP. Now, of course, if something happens and Giannis falls off for the rest of the season, or Giannis just doesn't play very well and the Bucks go in a tailspin, and, you know, of course the MVP could change. That's why the votes aren't due until April 14th or somewhere around there. I am an official voter for all of the regular season awards. So I will be voting, and I'm going to hold off on my vote until then. But I'm just saying right now, and I'll give my reasoning after J-Mac is done. Right now, I've got Giannis, the clear favorite. Got LeBron as the clear runner-up. And then, who knows, you know, James Harden, Luka, guys like that. But I think Giannis is clearly number one, and LeBron is clearly number two right now. J-Mac, you disagree. The floor is
yours.
Yeah,
this has been probably one of the better NBA debates in the last few years, this MVP race, right?
Really?
I mean, there's been some okay ones.
Because last year you had a great one in Harden versus Giannis.
But this one you have LeBron, the second greatest player in NBA history, against Giannis. And I do radio shows, you know, around the country. They call me up, and Jason, come on. And I've been steadfast. It's LeBron. And on my Saturday morning radio show, it's LeBron. We talked about this on Undisputed recently, Chris. LeBron is the MVP of the league. Now, I know people are going to be like, yeah, Jason, what? You're a ball washer of LeBron. You're a LeBron stan, whatever that means. Listen, these same people ripping me for picking LeBron as MVP a couple years ago when I said KD was the best player in the league, they said I'm a LeBron hater. Folks, I don't play favorites here, okay? I'm strictly looking at the body of work. Giannis, I'm not going to spend an hour. His stats are through the roof. They're astronomical. Player efficiency rating, tops in the league. On pace to be maybe the best all time. Maybe all time. No, no, these usually tail off a little bit.
It's been 50-something games.
It tailed off last night a little bit after they got curb stomped by the Heat, and he was mediocre. Okay? But no doubt, Giannis's stats are there. The Bucks have the best record. They're chasing 70 wins. Good for those guys in the downtrodden East. LeBron's is a little different, Chris. This isn't simply, oh, he's averaging 25 and 10 and 7. Those are pretty good numbers. Great runner-up. There needs to be context. And yes, his age matters. LeBron doing this at 35 years old
certainly matters.
We have never in NBA history seen a player in his 17th season put up these kind of numbers. And in his 17th season to efficiently change positions to be a true point guard. He's bringing the ball up the court basically every time he's on the court. And then lead the NBA in assists without seeing a significant drop in his scoring. What LeBron's done this year at the age of 35 has never been done before in league history. Michael Jordan had a good 35. He ain't lead the league in assists at 35. LeBron is leading the league in assists by a considerable margin. Considerable. He's shooting 35% from three. And I need to add this, and people are not going to want to hear it, especially in Los Angeles. Okay? LeBron was hurt last year. He went out, this Laker team that everybody thought was good, stunk up the joint. Okay, I know they traded away half the roster and got Anthony Davis, okay? What LeBron has steered the Lakers
didn't
through.
LeBron play with them, though?
Let's keep it real. Yeah, and they were fourth in the West on Christmas Day, and then he got hurt.
But when he came back, I'm not even trying to argue against you.
No, no, you're right.
I'm just saying, because I always argue this with Rob. Rob comes at me with it, but there's truth to it.
And then
when LeBron came back, they still stunk up the joint.
But he came back and they tried to trade half the team. Nobody knew what they were doing. They tried to trade half the team for Anthony Davis. There was chemistry issues. And this year, LeBron has helped steer this Laker franchise through the Kobe Bryant tragedy and what he's done as an ambassador for the league through all this and still lead the league in assists, have the Lakers number one in the West by 4 or 5 games. It has been a difficult season for LeBron and for what he's done. His body of work for the season, I think, has been more impressive than Giannis's.
All right, look, let me first start off by saying this. LeBron has had a phenomenal year. LeBron is playing tremendous basketball. Not his best basketball, but he's playing tremendous basketball. I would argue it is the best 17th season we've ever seen by an NBA player.
Nobody would push back.
Karl Malone and Kobe Bryant would be the other two that would come close, but I'd give LeBron the edge. Kobe averaged 27 points a game in the 17th year, and that's the year with 6 games left he got hurt with ruptured his Achilles.
Their team stunk, though, that year, right?
They were okay. I think they made the playoffs.
Yeah, not a contender.
No, not a contender. He didn't have Anthony Davis either. There's that. But here's the thing, Jason. I am not, as a voter, I'm not to look at it and say, this is his 17th year. That doesn't matter. It's the MVP. It's the who's been the best player. It's not who's been the best player under certain circumstances. Who's been the best player for a certain age? Because if we're going to play that game, then let's look at Luka Doncic and say he's only 21.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why he's third.
He's in his second year. That's not why he's third. He's third because he's third if you call. I don't think he's third. I think Harden is. But wherever. He's in the running not because he's 21, but because he legitimately is having a tremendous season and a tremendous impact on winning. So if we're going to start bringing all that stuff into it, then it's a whole different story we're talking about.
Doesn't context
now,
matter?
Now, this isn't context. Context is the NBA season. It's not about that storyline. It's not about storyline. Now, here's where I would give you something.
I see.
Here's where I would give it to you. If LeBron had never won an MVP and we knew he was the best player in the league for several years and for whatever reason he just never was able to win an MVP, then that's usually when the media says, you know what, he deserves
that's
one.
That's charity.
We got to give him one. Because Kobe deserved more than one, but at late we said, you know what? It's a travesty Kobe Bryant doesn't have an MVP award. He's got to get one.
I've forgotten. Did that really happen 10 years ago?
No, I mean, I don't remember. I'm sure he had a great year, but, you know, that does come into play. That comes into play. But here's the thing. As great as LeBron is playing, and he's playing great, and he is clearly the Lakers' best player, he doesn't lead them in scoring. He doesn't lead them in rebounding. He doesn't lead them in steals. He doesn't lead them in blocks. He's not their best defender. He doesn't lead them in PER, player efficiency rating. All of those things are led by Anthony Davis. And when you watch the game, it's clear LeBron's the best player.
Mm-hmm.
But statistically, he's not leading his team in the analytical stats or the traditional stats. And Giannis is, as I've said, he's beating LeBron in the traditional stats, points, rebounds, assists, field goal percentage. Or assist, he's not beating him, obviously. He's beating him in the analytics in that he's got the highest player efficiency rating we've ever seen. He does it more on both ends of the court. He's arguably the best defensive player in the league. He is on pace to win 68 to 71 games. Oh, and by the way, he doesn't have anyone close to Anthony Davis as a teammate.
Oh, okay.
And that is a fact. I'm a voter. I've been voting for 25 years. Three of my main criteria, individual numbers and performance, team success, and who's helping you. What's your supporting cast like? And when LeBron was in Cleveland with Mo Williams as his second guy, kind of like Chris Middleton is Giannis' second guy, I took that into account when LeBron amazingly could lead them to 61 and 66
wins.
Can I
ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
When Russell Westbrook averaged a triple-double, 3-4 years ago?
Yep.
And the Thunder were 6th in the West. Did you vote him for MVP?
Yes. Historic achievement.
Oh.
Something we'd only seen one time in the almost 75-year history of the game. Had to give it to him. Historic achievement.
So that's historic, but LeBron.
And they won about 48 games.
LeBron having the best 17th season in NBA history in 70 years. Whatever you want, a number you want to make up.
That's not as historic. That's not as historic.
Not as historic. He's an old man carving up the league.
He's not an old man.
He's 35.
He's no.
Coming off an injury.
Okay, hold on. Because you said you misspoke earlier. And you said that Michael Jordan had a pretty good set 35-year, you know, when
he was
35.
He was good. They won the title.
No, he was more. He actually, no. Did he lead the league in assists? No.
No, of course not.
He led the league in scoring, which I think is more difficult to do.
He did that like 8 times in his career.
No, he did it 10 straight years when he was healthy.
Whatever. There you go.
So my point is, I would say Michael Jordan had a better year when he was 35
than LeBron.
So you're
a scoring guy. Okay, so scoring is all that matters. You're one of these guys.
No, I never said that. Hold on, stop it. I never even implied that scoring is all that matters. So stop.
Well, I mean, you're saying that he averaged more points than LeBron at 35 years old, so
yes,
he was better?
I think it's more impressive to lead the league in scoring than in assists.
After winning, 5 titles in 7 years against when all the NBA greats had left the league, you know, Michael Jordan was carving up the league.
So Patrick Ewing wasn't an NBA great?
What did he win? To go back to last hour, what did he win?
Was Shaquille O'Neal an NBA great?
Shaquille O'Neal was like 21 in Orlando or 22. Come on, get out of here.
Shaquille O'Neal came in the league in 1992. Okay, Michael Jordan won it in 1998.
Fine, 98, 97. Shaq was 26.
That's all. That's right smack dab in the middle of your prime. And he was 28, by the way.
Actually,
27.
I think he might have been.
Basically, Shaq didn't win anything until Jordan left.
Yeah, nobody won anything until Jordan left. Elijah won, and your Rockets, who won titles. They only won because Jordan left. But to get back to LeBron versus Giannis, the other thing is, Giannis is putting up these awesome stats on a great Bucks team. They're just killing and murdering the East. Oh, it's funny. It's that same East that LeBron dismembered for a decade.
Actually, it's
and
not.
And all I heard was, oh, well, LeBron's beating up some plumbers in the
from
East.
From who?
And all these Bucks. That's all
that
anybody
from?
Said.
LeBron, no, give me. No, you're going to sit on here in the eye couple and state that. Yeah. I don't agree.
For
give
years,
me the facts.
LeBron.
Who?
Who did he beat in the East? They got to 8 straight finals. Well, it's in the East. Anybody. I'm not going to call out guys
that?
In my own network or the other network. You heard that argument everywhere. LeBron's beating a weak East. He's got to the finals 8 straight years in the East. Oh, they had the Hawks as the number one seed 1 year. 60 wins. Whoop-dee-damn-do. That's all I heard. So now Giannis and the Bucks are on a historic pace in the East.
Did LeBron ever
in the East where the Sixers
are
beat up?
Did he ever win 70 games? In the East?
I don't think he won 70. 66.
And in Cleveland his last 4 years there, he didn't win a lot of games. Everyone went 60.
And he still got to the finals because the Raptors
That's
were a
great.
Joke.
No,
and the Hawks
no,
were a joke.
No, he didn't get to the finals because those teams were jokes. He got to the finals because he's great.
Who was his second best player when he was getting to the finals when Kyrie left? Kevin Love?
Kyrie was there all but 1 year went to the finals.
And they got to the finals.
Jason, I'm trying to help you because you're arguing against yourself.
It doesn't need help.
No.
LeBron is the MVP.
You just sat there and shot down the East. I'm saying LeBron didn't get to the finals in the East because it was weak. He got there because he was great. But you're saying no, it's because the East
no,
was
no.
weak.
I'm saying
you just said that.
He was great. The
and
East
the East
was
isn't
weak.
That
and
bad
all,
right
any,
now. Boston all, is legit. Philly is legit.
Philly's legit?
Toronto
Philly's
is legit.
Philly's a fifth seed and they can't win games on the road. They got a road record like the Knicks. Get
Toronto
out of here,
Toronto is legit. Philly
please,
is
they're
legit.
They're a paper tiger.
Boston is legit.
I like Boston. They're my
Miami
pick to win the East.
Miami is legit.
Miami's playing over their
you
head,
You got five
whatever.
Legit and I'm not even mentioning
stop
Indiana. Because the West ain't what it used to be.
Oh, Jesus. All right? See, we... This is a one-hour discussion.
Pelicans. That's it, right. Sacramento, Phoenix,
you're talking about
Memphis.
Teams that are in the lottery.
That's my point.
No. The teams in 6, 7, and
Oklahoma
8 in the East
City
are Orlando and Brooklyn.
Oklahoma City
These are
is
pathetic
7th.
Teams. Oklahoma City's amazing. Chris Paul's going to get like 5th in the MVP voting.
877-99 on Fox. 877-996-63.
We're not changing
Stop
off this topic
it.
The rest of the
You're
show.
Done. Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Let's go to a great guest at this time. He's a 4-time NBA All-Star, NBA champion. Was known as one of the better defenders one of the grittiest defenders, and maybe a precursor to what we see today in the NBA, the great Sean Marion. Sean, welcome to the Odd Couple.
What's up, Chris and Jason? How y'all doing tonight?
Man, it's great to have you on, brother. So let's get right to it. Today's NBA, they play really fast. They shoot a lot of threes. There's more small ball. Do you look back when you watch it and say, man, I have a lot to do with the way the game is played right now?
You know, I don't personally look at the game like that, but I think that we started a trend, and it basically escalated to what the game is right now. You know what I'm saying? Going from basically positionless basketball to a certain degree. And with that being said, though, like, I think the talent level is a lot higher now, too, than back then, especially when it comes to the big guys. You know, I think it was a time where it was the power forward was the most dominant position. The power forward and center was the most dominant position in the league. Now it's kind of like it's been guard heavy for the last guard dominant for the last what six years now,
at
six,
least
7 years.
Yeah.
So it's all perimeter, more of a perimeter game now, dynamic game. And I wouldn't say all star. You know who changed the evolution of the game? All fairness aside, y'all really know the game. Think about it. Who was the one person that evolutionized the game? When it, far as big man being able to do a lot of things with the ball, who was it?
Mm. Well, I mean, that's a good. You know, some people even say Magic and Bird at 6'9". You know, handling the ball a lot were the initial big men to do that.
They were, but like it kind of they was
Dirk,
they're generational guys. Dirk. that was just unique and did something else. No, I'm just talking about far as a real. True. When you think of a big man, think about the big man that
Dirk was one of the first seven footers out there.
Rashard Lewis got the
Dirk Nowitzki, Rashard Lewis, Rashid shot a lot of threes. Who is it?
Nope, they shot jump shots and stuff, but they didn't put the ball on the floor.
Who you
I'm
got?
Talking about, when you think about big men's now, most of the big men's now can bring the ball to the floor. Am I right?
Yeah, most yes, certainly
most of
the
not
best
all
ones.
Of them, but
certainly
most of
the best ones.
Yeah, the really good ones can put the ball on the floor and bring the ball to the court. So when you think about that. Shaq was probably one of the biggest, first guys I've ever seen that. He actually could bring the ball to the floor.
He didn't do it, but he could.
But he was telling him to do it. Then you saw signs of like Amari. Remember Mo Taylor? Maurice Taylor? He was the first big man, power forward, to have a crossover.
Michigan.
Going underground.
Yeah. Wow.
Then you go, KG actually, he put the ball on the floor, but he didn't put the ball on the floor like that. Tim Duncan handled it. They handled it when they needed to. Mm-hmm. But that was a trend. That was a thing that they kind of started the movement for, and it just evolutionalized. It kept getting bigger, and then guys kept getting better and better. And now you got big guys who are actually able to handle the ball and do a lot more things with the ball. And that's why they don't post up anymore. The physicality of the game is going now. Like they all shooting jumpers now because they want to look good. They want to prove to everybody they guards. They can do the same thing guards can do. So they don't post up no more.
When you look at it, Steve Nash, I believe, said this once. As much as you guys in Phoenix changed the game, when you look back, he's like, man, we should have played a lot faster. Because as fast as you guys played for that time, that would be one of the slowest paces in the league right now. Do you look at that and say, yeah, we could have went even faster?
Actually, could have.
Sean, what's up? Jason McIntyre here. I'm one of the co-owners of the New Zealand Breakers, like yourself. Good to finally talk to you. I got to ask you about this whole situation with Giannis, and he's not a guy who's shooting threes yet. But we know that he wants to shoot threes. He's starting to shoot more. I mean, we've seen LeBron this year average more threes, over six a game than ever in his career. You know, does Giannis have to shoot threes the way you said big men are starting to shoot threes? Or should he just say, you know what, I'm 7 feet, I can dominate inside, I don't need to learn how to shoot threes?
Giannis is such a special player because of his size and his ability to do so many things on the floor. And it's just his heart. It's like it's very – you can't put a price, it's unmatched. You know, his determination, his willpower is just like something you can't put a price on. You know, I know him and James Harden been going back and forth this year, you know, with some words in the past week. You know, I'm not going to even get into that. I'm going to tell you why I think Giannis should do, just based off of just the game, where the game is right now. And because he's so dominant inside, and he's able to do so many different things on the floor, I want him to see him to get a. I would rather see him get a consistent 15 to 17 foot jump shot, which everybody think is a bad shot. But I don't think so, because what it's going to do is going to create more opportunities and different opportunities for his teammates and himself. But also get a dominant hook shot, because if he's not dunking the ball, he has no finesse game around the basket. Get a hook shot, get a little post hook around the basket. If he get that, he's unstoppable.
Yeah, but Sean, you know these coaches are going to tell him, hey, Giannis, hey, don't take that 17-footer. Step 3 feet back and take it.
I don't think they're going to tell him that.
They ain't going to tell him that. They're not going to tell him that. You know what I'm saying? You telling me you want this guy who's leading the league in paint scoring for the last 3 years or whatever to go out there. You tell me you want him to shoot a 3 versus a 2? Stop it. Stop it.
I'm with you on that.
At the same time, though, like this, that's the problem when it comes to the postseason, though. Like you're saying this and that. If you got a guy as talented as he is, if they take away him dunking in the basket, he got to do something else now. You know, he's not able to finish. So now, you know, he gave him a go-to move on the block. I mean, regardless of what everybody say we all perimeter right now, but there are some guys, there's a couple of guys in the league that still post up. But with that being said, though, it is a weapon in the postseason, though. Like, you can use it because a lot of times them jumpers ain't falling. What can you go to then? If you're not hitting jumpers, what are you going to then?
Sean, I am in the minority in the media, I think, in this regard. I think Mike D'Antoni's a Hall of Fame coach. I know he's never won the championship or anything like that. But I think you guys, that year you had the suspensions, you know, when guys got off the bench for the brawl with the Spurs, I think you guys could have won the championship that year. What do you think Mike D'Antoni kind of gets overlooked or short shrift because you guys haven't won that championship? And does that eat at you that as great a team as you were and had chances to win the title, for various reasons, you guys never got over that hump?
Well, you know, I mean, like you can expect, like, I think y'all, so the media is able to control their narrative when it comes to that point right there. They talk about that year. Everybody put this on the suspension. There ain't no guarantee in that. And all honestly, I don't think it was that. That was the year for us to win it. And I'm just being kind of honest. You know, I think everybody said that. So, like, y'all took it and ran with it. So, like, that became a narrative that everybody posts out there. That's the year we should have won, a year because of the year it's been.
So, you saying that wasn't your best team?
No, I don't think so.
What was y'all's best
great
team?
I think it was a great team, but I didn't feel it that we could have won it that year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the Spurs were going to get y'all one way or the other.
Well, the Spurs had our number to a certain degree. Well, I think we could have made adjustments and probably won this series. I think we could have beat the Spurs. I'm not saying we could have went all the way and won it, though. I mean, that's no guarantee in that. That's the one thing about the game itself, you know. And I think after being on a championship team and understanding that feeling, that vibe, it's a different kind of feeling, you know. And I would say the feeling that we had when we won it in 2011 in Dallas, the feeling I had, that feeling, that's the same feeling I had when we lost to Dallas, when they lost against Miami in the championship. That's the same year. The other year, I didn't feel that. I didn't have that feeling. And you have a confident feeling in your team. I thought we were very capable. I couldn't guarantee that we could win it. I thought that was a team that possibly could beat us that year. You know what I'm saying?
I've got to ask you this. Because as much as I like D'Antoni, I've been critical of him and said one of his biggest weaknesses is his lack of attention to detail. And I felt in all those great series you guys had, especially with the Spurs, it seemed like those series always came down to some little detail, whereas maybe you guys missed a defensive rotation or made a turnover at the wrong time, lost track of a man, or like you said, you know, guys got off the bench when you know there was a brawl, whereas the Spurs stayed on the bench and you had guys suspended. So is that fair to say about D'Antoni?
Well, so no, I'm gonna tell you like this, and this is easy as it can, and it's 100% honest, exactly what came from the horse's mouth. We were predictable, like we knew exactly what we were gonna do out there on the floor. So, with that being said, though, as talented as we were, with the group of guys we had, amazing talented guys, Mari, Steve, me, Q. The first year was Q, and then Joe, and then the next year was Raja, you know, and St. Boris and all that. One of the things they said we was very predictable. They knew exactly what we was going to do. When you look at how we ran and how fast we were able to score in bunches because of a transition game, but when you look at half court, it was pretty much set in stone that either Mari was going to get in the pick and roll with Steve, and we was going to fill in. You know, everybody was going to fill in the perimeter. So, like, it's easy to guard. The only thing, if y'all really want to, get down and dirty with the way it was, look what Golden State did. All Golden State did, they did the same thing we did. The system they had. But guess what they did? They added cutting to it.
Right.
That's all they did. That's all they did. They added movement with it. We didn't have that with our. All we did was sit around and watch Steve.
And that's Rockets do today.
They watch one guy go at it and everybody watch around. But look at the way the game is, though. Like, you got guys now that are, With Rockets though, they got so many weapons on the floor at all times. But they create what happens is if you double team, you don't want James Harden to go for 60 because he can go for 60 on you. So right. You got to double team. So once you commit to double teaming somebody, you help. Now it's a chain reaction. Now
Sean,
it's all about equal opportunity. They're sharing the ball. They're getting the guys the right places to get opportunities.
Great stuff. We got to run. We got a break coming up. But great stuff, man. Sharing your
good
knowledge.
Stuff, Sean.
We'd like to get you on again because you definitely got a lot to say. So that's good stuff.
No doubt.
All right, brother. Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Daryl Morey, you know, I'm going to say this. What I like about Daryl Morey speaks his mind and tweets his mind. When he crossed the NBA, it's been many estimates, but around $200 million with his tweet about Hong Kong. So I give him credit. And I texted him. I said, you know what? I agreed with him. He tweeted about freedom. And but he cost the NBA a lot of money in the process. And today he went on First Things First and spoke his mind. So I have to respect that whether I agree or not. But he talked about the NBA media, not so much the writers and even guys like me. Maybe I don't think he's referring to me. He's more talking about the broadcasters who call games or who are in studio, the TNT guys, Chuck, Kenny, Shaq. Then you got Hubie Brown, Jeff Van Gundy, Mark Jackson. Am I missing anybody?
No, I think that pretty much is the gist.
Yeah, he's got to be that somebody.
He's targeting the Barkley crowd.
Really?
And Barkley's the number one guy. You think who's the most high-profile NBA analyst? It's Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
He's more shtick than actual analysis.
Right.
But he seems to be hating on three-pointers and right, the well, three-point generation.
Let's hear it. Here's what Morey said on First Things First this morning.
Right now, if you tune in a lot of NBA telecasts, the announcers are hate watching their own game. Like, it's amazing to me.
This is media bashing.
Hold on a second. This, 1,000% agree with him.
Yeah, you'll tune in. They'll be like, well, what's happening here? Like, they're shooting too many three-pointers, like, back and
forth. No. Hold on.
Oh, they are. It's crazy.
Here's the thing. And I especially love listening to Jeff Van Gundy, who I covered when he coached the Knicks, and Mark Jackson and Mike Breen. Who doesn't love Hubie Brown? I could listen to Hubie Brown talk basketball all day. And obviously I like the TNT show. That's the greatest sports show, studio show in sports right now. And I like that they give a critical eye. And Daryl Morey has to accept the fact that one reason they may say you're shooting too many threes, do something else if you keep missing them, is because Houston missed 27 straight three-pointers in a game 7 that could have got them to the finals again when they played the Golden State Warriors a few years ago.
At home, no less.
Should they be blamed for saying, you know what? You missed 20 straight. You missed 22 straight. How about a post-up? How about a 15-footer? So I like that, and Daryl has to accept that. And I think Daryl is a little overly sensitive because he is the poster child for analytics. Now, I think he's a huge analytics guy, but I think when push comes to shove, Daryl does essentially, up until this last trade of Clint Capella, Daryl does what most GMs do, and he goes out and gets the best player. Analytics be damned. You know, I mean, when he went and got Dwight Howard, that didn't fit the analytics. When he went and got Chris Paul, who's a mid-range assassin, that didn't fit the analytics. And ball dominant, by the way. When he went and got Russell Westbrook, that certainly didn't fit the analytics. So at the end of the day, he's going to go get talent. But he is known as the guy, the face of the analytics revolution. So I think he takes it more personal. Even if they're not talking about the Rockets, he takes it personal.
So, Chris, you keep banging on that Rockets missing 27 straight threes. in 2018. By the way, that's one of my favorite quarters since the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq rallied to beat the Blazers in Game 7. You remember that epic game? Yes. Western Conference Finals. Yes. That Warriors game, if you go look up the fourth quarter or the third quarter on YouTube, when Steph Curry goes bananas and Kevin Durant, they're just splashing threes and the Rockets can't make anything. I love that quarter. But the odds of the Rockets missing 27 straight three-pointers, 1 in 72,000.
Oh, of course.
This is what got them there, shooting the threes. You don't all of a sudden say, hey, threes aren't falling. Let's post up Clint Capella, who has zero low post game.
But didn't you say, like, let's get in the paint or let's hit a 15-footer?
Get in the paint with whom?
With
they don't have any post-up guys.
James Harden.
Like, he could have driven.
There
you could
ways
argue
to get
James,
in the paint. You don't have to post up. You can drive.
Again,
you
this
can
is,
cut.
The James Harden in the postseason is known as a Mr. Meltdown. That's what he does in the playoffs.
But he has obviously melted down many a time in the playoffs, but he's also had some huge games.
Oh, he's had some good games, yeah. But at any rate, I think what Morey's really upset about is just that there aren't enough analytics when you're talking on television. And it's really tough, Chris. I can't trot out on national TV and go, well, the net rating for the Lakers with LeBron is blah, blah, blah. Like, that just doesn't play well on television. You know this. You've been in TV for 20 years. Stats
can,
are very difficult.
If you say
difficult.
It in a certain way, you can say it.
You can, but then you got to explain.
You just
got to
say it quickly.
And again, what sells better? Charles Barkley yucking it up with Shaq, making fun of people, clowning Shaq and a fool and all that? Of course it does. It plays well on social media. But Morey, I think he's just a little bit salty that he's been on the short end of the stick a few times with the Rockets. They've had some great teams, and they ran into one of the, I think, the best dynasty in modern NBA history with Curry, KD,
but
and
you
Clay.
You keep saying that, but it wasn't just that. He's been there 13 years.
Who
they run into the other years?
Well, listen, when they started the three-point analytics, which was started by the Warriors and the Splash Brothers, Curry and Clay, you know, that's when the Rockets
they started
went heavy
a little before that.
Well, you could argue, Nash's teams in 2007.
Well, teams began to know well before the Warriors that, you know, the math, that if you shoot 33% from three, it's the equivalent of shooting 50% from two.
Right. And, you know, the Warriors perfected that with, two of the greatest shooters the league's ever seen.
Yes.
And, you know, the Rockets tried to duplicate that or whatever. But my beef with these announcers, and I will say, shout out to Chris Webber. I'm a big fan of Webber's work. He gets hated on big time
like
on social media. But I think they need to get in some new faces. And I know that's tough to say, but you got a lot of the same guys, same mentality, same idea, diversity
like
of
who?
Thought. Diversity of thought is something great.
I mean, like
great.
Who?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not. I'm
they
not
get X play. I'm just like,
how many X players?
Chris Webber is a young retiree.
Chris Webber's good. I mean, listen, I'm not a huge Reggie Miller fan, and I'm not saying that because he blocked me on Twitter like 3 years ago. But you know, you got all these guys from the same era who are pumping up their guys that they played with. They're always going to side with Jordan over LeBron, no matter what LeBron does. I need some diversity of thought. I don't care if you want to go old or skew young. They
the guys that the guys that will typically, and there are a few old heads that might go LeBron over Jordan, but the guys that typically are going to go LeBron over Jordan are still playing.
It's fair.
I mean, you know what I mean? They're younger guys. And I've always said this, and this is a nice segue into LeBron. I have said this. I want your opinion on it. That 15 years from now, maybe not even that long, maybe 10 years from now, LeBron will be known as the GOAT. I don't think he's the GOAT. I think Jordan is the GOAT. But it's my generation that is named Jordan the GOAT. And we control the narrative right now. The older generation, Oscar Robertson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, guys like that, they're not saying Jordan's the GOAT. Now, they respect his game,
right,
and they know he was one of the GOATs, one of the greatest. But they're not going to name him, oh, he's the greatest of all time. And even a lot of just regular people, fans from that era, won't do that.
Yeah.
It's my generation, and right now we control the narrative. When the millennials, you're not quite a millennial. When your generation
close.
And below, the millennials, control the narrative, I think they're going to have LeBron.
Yeah.
As the GOAT.
It's funny you say that. In the production meeting we had before the show, I said to producer Rob G, I think LeBron is almost underrated right now. And he was like, he gave me that. I don't underrate. And I'm telling you, there's a case to be made. Like, Chris, you've said it on Undisputed. The 17th year LeBron is having is unbelievable.
Agreed.
And best what he's doing at the age of 35. Remember, he was injured last year, and everybody said, oh, well, his powers are going to be diminished. And LeBron has swept up that narrative with hashtag washed king on Instagram every post he does. And listen, I think there's something to that. This comeback that LeBron's had.
Is that part of your MVP narrative?
Hell yes,
so,
it is.
So maybe we'll just make him comeback player of the year.
I think that
shouldn't be a part of it.
What? It's the entire body
it
of work.
It shouldn't be a part like he was injured last year, so we got to give him MVP.
Okay, so I looked
I'm
this
not going
to
hold it against Giannis that he was healthy.
But it's not being held against him. I think 9 of the last 13 MVPs, their team had the number one record in the NBA. The 4 who didn't, your guy Russell Westbrook, right, when he averaged a triple-double. Kevin Durant in his Thunder were number 2 in the West. Remember when he made that speech and cried?
Yep.
I think the Spurs were number 1. LeBron was 2nd in the East during the 66-game season. Derrick Rose won it the year before.
66, wait.
No,
when
it was
LeBron
a 66-game. No, 66-game
shortened
season. LeBron's team was 2nd in the East to the Bulls.
Right.
And then way back in 2008, Kobe, number 2 record in the NBA, but number 1 in the West. And Kobe was the MVP.
I'm glad you brought that up, J-Mac, because obviously you're pushing for LeBron as MVP. And one of my reasons for Giannis over LeBron is Giannis doesn't have the second superstar like LeBron does in AD.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, you believe Kevin Durant's been the best player in the league, you know, what, the previous three, 4 years?
I thought the 2 years he played on the Warriors, he was the best player in the league.
Well, 3. So you would say 3 years.
Well,
3 years.
Yeah, I guess he got hurt. Yeah, okay.
He got hurt in the playoffs. Okay. He was never among, and neither was Steph for that matter. In those 3 years, they were never among, you know, that top 1, 2, 3 vote getters in the NBA MVP race.
Well,
why? Because they had 2 superstars that kind of canceled each other out.
But also, Steph
Shaq
Curry
and
had
Kobe
just,
did the same
Steph
thing.
Steph Curry
each
had
other.
Just won 2.
Yeah, but so? That doesn't matter.
I mean, they're not going to give him more MVP.
You
the
might,
media votes
if he
on
deserves it. Larry Bird had won 3 straight. I think either Wilt or Bill Russell also won 3 straight. So Steve Nash was in the hunt for a 3rd straight. It ended up going to Dirk. So my point is that they canceled each other out. So that has been a part of the thinking for years. Shaq and Kobe got 2 MVPs total between them. They canceled each other out.
Kobe got 1 MVP?
Kobe only has 1. Shaq only has 1.
LeBron got
4 ridiculous.
In 5 years.
Right, but he also has 4
and did Derrick Rose earn that?
He has 4 in 16 years.
Yeah. Did Derrick Rose earn that one over LeBron? My memory doesn't
go back.
Yeah,
and part of it was because Rose led the Bulls, I believe, to the best record in the East.
Okay, and who
with
won?
With no second superstar.
Who won in the playoffs?
It's a regular
and
season
see,
award.
And that's another problem. Like how
that it shouldn't be a regular season?
No. I get, how can you be the best player in the league if when the playoffs
it's
come, you can't get through
that team?
Best
player in the league.
So what is it?
It's the best, who had the best season. Because okay. Steve Nash was never considered the best player in the league. Never even close to considered the best player in the league, and he won 2 straight.
What's the point of the award if all the announcers, as we say all the time, keep pushing rings, playoff, that's all that matters, regular season, who cares? Why are we giving an MVP to a guy for regular season where it's pretty clear it doesn't matter? Kawhi's load managing in November. All
Kawhi's
that matters is the playoffs.
Kawhi's the only one really doing that excessive load managing.
I think he's starting a trend that could be troubling
I hope
for
not.
The league.
I agree. If they win it, I think you have to at least get to the finals, if not win it, when you load manage to this extent.
Oh, and he better win it.
And if they do win it, you're absolutely right. You're going to see more and more of this, which is not good.
And if
good
they
for
lose
the
it, are we going to be able to clown Kawhi all summer?
It'll work against them. And I bet if they don't get to the finals, I do think next year you may see something different with the Clippers where he's playing more. However, he's got the opt-out where he's got control, and they're going to want to keep him, so he may continue.